good to me. Live from the Twin Cities, we are the Daves. You know, this is the Daves.
You want me to be that type of dude, and I want to be who you like me to. But we both know I can't do nothing at all.
Hello and welcome to episode 312 of the Daves I Know podcast. We are, the Daves you know. And with me today, I have Bridget McDowell. Bridget was on podcast. This was the last week. Yeah, last week was your first time in a while. And Bridget's back talking some Minnesota soccer. How are you doing, Bridget? How was your weekend?
I'm good. The weekend was good.
Couple I nice should say wins. So. Yep, Bridget and I watched.
Nice wins to top off the not so great last weekend. So
I watched St. Pauli, Liverpool, and the Loons all win on Sunday. So it was a pretty good Sunday for me. So and who had a good Sunday? MJ, how you doing, buddy?
I'm happy to be here, and Loons win. So.
Absolutely. And joining us shortly will be Rodrigo Sanchez Chavarria. He's just running a little bit late, so we'll get going. Rodrigo will jump in when he joins us. So first off, obviously big talking point, Loons 3, Charlotte 0, down in the CLT, CLT. So first off, guys, Bridget, I'll start with you. What were your overall thoughts on the game as a whole?
As a whole, I think it was a complete performance from the squad, which we haven't seen in quite a while. I don't know if that was due mainly to all the roster lineup changes. Five. Did you know that you could make five changes between games? But I think it really completely changed the tempo. And I mean, it did exactly what Ramsey has been saying he wanted to try to see in some of these upcoming games. So, but overall, really solid. I mean, you have a forward and a defender and a coach all on team of the match day. Padelford as a young player of the week, mm-hmm. kind of an honor. But pretty solid across the board. Some of the usual moments, but you're gonna see those in every game, so we can just get used to that part. But it was fun to watch.
It was interesting just listening to some of the takeaways from Ramsey, and then listening to I think it was the Realtors podcast today. I think maybe just that it seemed to me that. This might be that we're going to see a coach who adjusts his tactics based on the team he's playing, has a general way he wants to play overall, has a general way he wants to play away from home, and then has a way he wants to play at home. And obviously, I think tweaking it based on the team and who seems to be in good form. This is really fucking refreshing. wait, you're playing the players who are in good form, who have been... you change your system up. You have you identify when Ramsey was talking about Joseph Rosales, talking about the things that he'd seen, and that's why they mm-hmm. played him the way he did. Like, holy fuck, you can actually do that. That's amazing.
And let the two guys who are gonna interlap go ahead and interlap.
Yeah,
from the very beginning. Like, exactly. Who cares what side you're putting them on? They're gonna do that. Let them run.
Right on. And, yeah.
And still having some identity of their own through the game, not just trying to adapt to the other team. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Turns out you can do all of these things at once.
Yeah. MJ, what were your thoughts on the match?
Piggyback on that. I mean, Ramsey had a lot of good quotes that I don't want to step on Bridget's piece that's coming out. I'm sure we'll include some of them, but just talking about that balance of we want to have our identity of being, you know, compressed or condensed in the midfield and keep them out of the center of the midfield. So whatever formation we have or whatever players we have, we're going to be, you know, packing the middle of the pitch and defending as a unit and being compact, regardless, again, of formation or who's on the pitch. I think that's pretty incredible. And it's, I think, in the best of Minnesota United's games this season, you can see that identity. And he also has a really great quote about just picking players that they think suit exactly what David said. This is the competition that we're going to be facing. Maybe this is the climate or weather that we're playing in, you know, and that is refreshing to say it like you both did.
Yeah. So let's maybe talk. We can, that kind of is a good transition into talking a little bit about the game. Bridget, you mentioned the, you know, the heavy rotation. They lined up in what was, you know, looked like a 4-3-3, at least to start, really kind of morphed into a 5-2-3, or maybe like a 3-4-3, with Rosales, and Taylor being able to make those attacking runs, up the left and right respectively. And Curve and Arriaga dropping back is to sort of that middle, center back, spot. So three defenders when we were attacking, and then Rosales and Taylor busting ass to get back when the ball was in Minnesota's, half, the defensive half for Minnesota. So, what did you guys have any specific thoughts on, we've seen this team kind of run a 3-5-2 nominally with Adrian Heath. It was absolute garbage. And, they definitely did not set his team up for success when he did that, going down to Kansas City for like open cup matches where they would lose 6-0. This is actually seems like clearly what this was a design that Ramsey had concocted to suffocate that middle of the pitch, like you had mentioned, MJ, and allow the team to sort of press, you know, when they felt they could, you know, sort of like, you know, having a trigger for the press, not just, you know, as we saw those first couple of games, the balls to the wall pressing. So, what are your guys' thoughts on sort of that formation? The changes, obviously Tani coming in for Pukki, being the, probably the one that got the most ink. Bridget or MJ, go ahead.
I'll just say this. How many times have you heard me on this podcast, David, say, yes, I hear you. I hear that you, David, want to run a 3-5-2. You look at the personnel we have and we should run a 3-5-2 or a 5-3-2 or something like some odd persons at the back. And I'm like, he doesn't know how to run those things. I hear that. I see what you're seeing with who's injured and who's available and like who we're going up against. This kind of makes sense that we would run something like this. But he doesn't understand these formations. We have a manager who now definitely understands them. You know, whether I was right on the podcast for the last X number of years saying that or not, it's obvious to me that in you know, one data point does not mean a season, but
right, of course,
it's very obvious to me that there was a plan put in motion and the plan worked.
You also have a coach who's going to depend on all 10 field players and not just have everybody send the ball to one guy. Right. So it had to be a 4-2-3-1 with Heath because he was building everything out around Reynoso, or Darwin, or insert player's name here, revolving door. But with this, this ability to change in game, to change, as they switch the field in these plays, which isn't something that we saw very often last year either, or anytime until this season, those in-game switches just to say, hey, let's go to the left. Let's have Lou run out there on the left side instead of the right where he started, and we'll mix it up here. And the first goal came from, there were a couple moments where Lou is sprinting back in the Charlotte's third, or in the Minnesota's own third as Charlotte's attacking and pulling the ball back. That first ball that he got to the assist for the goal came all the way from Minnesota's own half.
Yeah,
collecting it back there and bringing it back up, and that wasn't the first time that he had done that. There were a couple times where, like, they all go sprinting back, and suddenly I see Lude sprinting ahead with the ball, and I'm like, dude, he was just like standing in the box, like, waiting for a ball, and now he's sprinting up there with the ball that he collected himself. So, like full team defense, and then you don't have to lean on. There were a couple moments where Boxy and Pedelford still had to go sprint back there and cover, but Dane was ready for it because he knew that's what the game plan was. He came off his line a couple times to kind of clear even that line up a little bit. The wingers come sprinting back to at least bring that line forward a little bit, but it's just completely different in terms of using those wings. And when you have six starting caliber wingers, why not use them? Right. Mm-hmm. Which is what you can easily do with this 3-5-2 kind of switch.
Yeah. That, we could talk about that tiny goal, 'cause it was pretty amazing. Lute, as you mentioned, Lute, you know, hits that pass from, you know, Minnesota's half. Funnily enough, that was like, and Tani just plays it perfectly, lets the ball drop in front of him, bounce. It was basically at that point, it's like a 1v5, Tani versus five defenders, not including the goalkeeper.
He pointed to the spot where he wanted it. Luke sent it. He's like right there.
Chip. And then, he just hits it back across the goalkeeper. And then kisses the post as well, and went in as opposed to out, as the posts have done to us recently. So it was
Closely, but did he one touch that? I know he let it bounce.
Yeah, it was on the bounce down. He hit it. Yeah. So yeah, like, he didn't take a touch on the ball until he hit it.
The bounce wasn't from his foot. It was from Lude's.
Nope.
Lude's
it was from bad. Yep. It was from the chip over. Yeah. It was absolutely perfect.
And what a beautiful chip it was, right?
Yeah.
And if you look at, if you go back, probably not on the highlights, but like if you go back and watch on Apple TV and or Fox and go all the way back, you see buildup in all of these where before Lude got the ball, I don't remember which two or three loons touched it, but you see like an intention and a vision with their passing, and especially with that second goal, not to get too much ahead of ourselves, but like just some really amazing teamwork in progressing the ball forward.
They were working a lot on that left-hand side, and I think the idea was to work it up the left with Rosales, who you could trust to be a little more creative than say a DJ Taylor, and then whip it over, you know, whip it cross field to the right and unbalance the defense, right? You kind of suck the defense over to, you know, their right hand side. And if you're able to hit a ball over the top, across for the right hand side, then it just opens up a ton of space, right? With Fragapane or Lude or whomever is over there. So it's definitely, yeah, it was definitely calculated that way. I think they definitely had a game plan, and they did it to perfection.
Long balls. There were no long balls back into the half. Like, let's clear it and try to start a counterattack. The counterattacks all started from their own third and moving forward. And they definitely, I think, having Rosales back where you're able to capitalize on his ability to go 1v2 with guys right on the sideline, mm-hmm. and get those balls out of those spaces. 'Cause Taylor can't do that. Taylor will come in and he'll do the slide tackle to at least get the ball off that guy's foot for either a throw in for himself or for the other team. It doesn't matter. But Rosales can just completely change things up there, draw two or three guys and give everyone else time to sprint ahead. And when you're playing a team that plays kind of similarly, I mean, the matchups were all over the place. Like Rosales has won 1v1 with Copetti, which is, he's one of the forwards who should be he was on the correct side. They swap a bit too, he and Vargas, but yeah, he's going in there against Rosales. Rosales just jukes him, like, all right, got it. Like, he's the forward dribbling through everybody and not this DP forward who's, you know, trying to defend him. So,
yeah. And I think that, I mean, I was highlighted too, like, yeah, so Rosales was definitely getting more into the attack. Taylor wasn't getting as much into the attack. He was getting in there a little bit, but I think more of his mandate was to kind of sit back a little bit and allow, you know, to recover and all that.
Just and just lob them forward, like cover and pass, but don't just
cover and reset, you know, reset to the center backs or whatever. I just want to, I think Rosales had an interesting game. I think you could look at his game and be like, okay, that was a terrible game. Or you could look at his game and be like, actually, that was a pretty good game. I think that's generally a good sign. He can be very frustrating. I think Boxall had his best game of the season as a Loon, as well as Padelford. Padelford, this is why I put this in some of the future questions. Like, is Padelford good? You know, like, there was some rough spots at the beginning, last year when he got his first few minutes. But he's really stepped up. I mean, talk about maybe the most improved Loon, at least over the first quarter of the season. I think Devin Padelford would certainly be high up on that list. For most improved, if not even in MLS, honestly. So I just want to say, just shout out we don't shout out the defenders very often because they don't score as many goals. But Boxall and Padelford, if Boxall, Padelford, and you get Tapias back, you could run that back three, and yeah, Tapias is going to be your destroyer. Boxall can distribute fairly well, and Padelford can. We've seen him distribute pretty well too these first few games as a center back. So.
He was a lot more physical in this game than he has been previously, which was really nice to see. He's obviously a different player than Boxall, and he is going to improve. Anyone who doesn't improve standing next to Boxy is probably missing a few messages. You know?
Right. They probably don't want to get better, basically. So.
Yeah. Whereas Padelford and Bacharach, who now is out for a couple months, but they've both spoken about how Boxy is like, he's the guy you want next to you in those situations. And Boxy's vocal out there, and you could see him kind of, he trusts them to make those runs. There have been times in the past where he might be paired up with someone he doesn't trust as much, and he's going to go far off of his line to try to get that ball and avoid getting into those situations. And he trusted Padelford to take care of those. And
and
he did that. I mean, he went one-on-one, like just bodying guys. It was like, you have no business doing that, but go for it.
Yeah.
Put 10 pounds of muscle on that kid and he'll be Boxy in no time.
Yeah.
With a little more speed.
Did you see, apparently there was one time where someone tried to push Boxall?
And he just it was like in the fifth minute.
Like very early on in the game. And he's just like, you're going down to the pitch now.
And I was watching the FS1 feed, and it was Jamie Watson. And he's like, you don't do that to Boxall. It's a little early in the night to be doing that stuff. Like, you see that when everyone gets frustrated, but and Boxall just walks away like, all right.
Yeah, it's really, really great to have a guy like that on your team. I mean, it reminds me a little bit. I mean, obviously not as talented, but Liverpool, Bridget with Virgil van Dijk and all the all the young kids he's had to play next, aside.
Yes.
And he's taught them well. And obviously Boxy's not Virgil van Dijk, and Devin Padelford is not, Gerald Kwanzaa or English Premier League players, but it's important that your center back and your captain, for that matter, is the one who is that people can look up to and takes that job very, very seriously as well, right? Like he takes that not just as an on-field captain, but as a helping players
in the locker room
on the training pitch and on the pitches on the regular on the main pitch as well. So go ahead, MJ.
We've seen a lot of people, whether the work they did to be in the off season, whether that's with the ball, with their fitness, whatever. Like, we've seen a lot of people that definitely have improved from last year. You mentioned Devin Padelford, is he good? He's improved so much. And I think when I ask this question, I do not want to take any way from the players' improvement that they did in the offseason themselves, whether that was doing their homework, whether that was, you know, getting in better shape, whether that was spending time with the ball. A lot of players got better. But who would you say has benefited the most from the structure that Eric Ramsey has provided, or if you want to say in the larger scope, that Khaled El-Ahmad has provided? Like, those two big changes have allowed some players to look like they get it and their strengths are maximized and their weaknesses are minimalized.
And they're not just running around in circles.
I think you could say this about a lot of players. Hassani Dotson comes to mind, first of all, as someone who is definitely thriving under this management better. Would you have any others that you would like to add?
I would throw in, like, a good chunk of the midfield has improved with these changes. I think a lot of that's tactically.
Yeah.
But and they might just look better because of what players around them are doing. But Dotson, I think the timing's right for him. Just, you know, he was still kind of working on getting match fit, really, after the injury, coming back last year from the injury. So I think the timing hit right with him to really work into the system. And I think we might be seeing the benefit with some of the newer guys on that as well. Yeah, all around, most of them are looking better now than they did. So I'm not going to pick out, like, which one changed because of Ramsey's tactics, but
I think the easy answer here is Tani Oluwaseyi. Just because if we don't make any changes last year, right, the previous regime, I'm not even going to dignify saying his name, stayed on, I think Mender Garcia is still a loon. I think that you have Pukki and Mender Garcia, in which case, you know, you have Patrick Weah.
Instead of bringing Tani back from loan, you're talking about
you're loaning him out, or you're selling him, or something. So I think legitimately Tani Oluwaseyi probably has the, we've seen for these first 2 months, right? Because even if Tani stays with the team, he does what he does. How many times did players show up, play well in their you know, brief cameos, and then were rewarded with a start? In the previous era, very, very rarely, very rarely, if ever, someone, you know, basically played their way onto the starting 11 from their play. And I'm sure Tani works really hard in practice, right? I'm sure all these dudes do. Like, you know, it's practice is one thing, and being able to perform on, you know, in front of, you know, 19,000 people is a completely different thing. And so, honestly, I think. So in terms of to the point of your question, MJ, I think in terms of, like, whether it's tactics, whether it's philosophy, you know, talk about Khaled El-Ahmad as well as Ramsey, like a philosophy of generally of you know, wanting to trust young players. I think the young guys are probably the ones who have benefited the most. And I think
that's a really good point.
Tani of the young guys is the one who's taken, if not benefited the most, he's taken the best advantage of it. You know, he literally played himself into, if not an every match starter, I think we could easily see Tani starting every away game.
He's definitely, he's an option, right? Like, it's, you know, if you need to rest Pukki, you can throw him in there. If you need to rest somebody else, you can throw him on the wing too. I mean, it's, he's versatile enough that, and he's willing to do anything. He's like, coach, put me in, tell me what to do. Random interesting stat, he's up to 3 goals in just 219 minutes. So this was his longest shift by far. He played an hour. He played 16 minutes yesterday, but most of his shifts have been fewer than 30. A couple of them were like 3 minutes. But 3 goals in 219 minutes. I mean,
well, every 70 minutes he scores a goal. That's an amazing rate if you can keep that up, though.
Also, they haven't updated the website, and he's still listed as loaned out.
Of course.
Despite having 3 goals on the season. So,
somebody should let the loons. Somebody should let the team know.
Has anyone looked at the Minnesota United 2 roster website yet.
Not recently, that also
needs some updating. I like what you're talking about, David, about playing the youth and believing in the youth and letting the youth get more playing time, and Tani benefiting from that. I want to go just circle back a little bit to the other side of the pitch in, like, when I've interviewed Will Trapp or a Michael Boxall, two people that have worn the captain's armband, two people that really dig tactics and really dig doing their homework and understanding the X's and O's of things. When they talk about the defensive aspects of Eric Ramsey's system, you can just tell they're completely bought in. And I think Bridget can say this, like, you talk to anybody, like when we interview Dotson, if we interview, you know, Ugo Bacharach, like, they've all bought in. And I think there was some conjectures last season about Heath losing the locker room. There may have been conjectures previous seasons about Heath losing the locker room. I understand we're still probably in a honeymoon phase here, but, like, they're bought in, and that makes a big difference too.
And they were, I'll just note, they were bought in before Ramsey.
Right.
They were bought in to Khalid, and they bought in with Knowles. Like, let's make the best of the situation. Let's do what we can for each other. They're playing off of each other. And you can, no matter who comes in as your coach, if you have that team building for, I think it's a positive that Ramsey didn't come in until a few games into the season. These guys had time to kind of coalesce as a team and figure out what they're willing to do for each other and with each other. And I think that makes it a lot easier to buy into a coach if you can do that as a team. And just what they had to go through, you know, the last few months leading up to that, I think helped with that. So it's not all bad if you're without a permanent coach in the preseason, as long as you've got somebody up there who's at least like, hey, this is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to take care of. This is what we're looking at. And I think it's easier for them to buy in from the beginning. So honeymoon phase, yes, but I think a lot of it started before Ramsey even walked
That's
through
a
that
really
door,
good point.
So.
Really good point, Bridget. Yeah. I will be the first to admit that I was very skeptical with the whole not having your head coach here for preseason, not having your head coach here for the first game. What is Minnesota United doing? They look disorganized, blah, 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 blah. I was one of those critics. And as both an MJ, it's very hard for me to say I was wrong, but also, like, as a dude, it's very hard to say I was wrong. And yeah.
I think a lot of it is due to the kind of squad that we have. If this was a team full of DPs, if this was a team full of, let's say, Messi, Alba, Diego Valeri, like throw any big, you know, more than three DPs per squad, throw them in there, and it would be a slightly different story. But this squad has had that has been their identity. Like, it's more of a workman team, and you do have the one guy each season or every 3 months who's, you know, the main guy, right? Or two. But for the most part, it has had to be, you know, full team buy-in, full team effort, and they've all got to work off of each other. So I think that makes a little bit of a difference, and that's definitely helped. I think having a system and a front office that buys into that attitude with the players that are already in, I think that makes a huge difference too. So that's where I would say that, you know, Robin Lud is one of the most improved players in terms of, we're talking not young players, not the kids.
Yeah.
Like, it's a different metric for him, and it's been fun to watch, right? Like we talked about the first goal, but the second goal was his own, with Fragapane on the assist. And then the third goal is another Lewin assist.
That was from a corner. So, either way. So yeah, you're right. I was actually just going to say, let's talk about those other two goals. That's perfect timing. But he and Robin Lewin made team of the match day, as well as you mentioned earlier, Eric Ramsey was the coach of the match day. And then Padelford was on the bench for MLS team of the match week. So is there anything else you want to say about this game? At all, anybody? I mean, we spent a lot of time talking. I think kind of talked around all the goals and everything, but if there's anything else you want to add.
Yeah. I think I'll just add that even though it was kind of an inverted thing, right? You bring in some of the younger, faster guys to start the game and then pull them out and put some of the older, more experienced guys who normally start the game. It wasn't a usual, like, it wasn't a reverse switch. Like, Pukki comes in and he's still moving fast. He's acting like he has to be the super sub, even though when he comes in, they're up 2-0. Mm-hmm. There were definitely some moments where you can see him lay off, like, okay, I don't need to put on the afterburners for this one because we've got a 3-goal cushion. I don't need to make that run. You can kind of see that calculation a few times, and that's with all of the guys. But you know, it gives them the ability. They have the experience and the ability to sit there and calculate that just a little bit, and they can, you know, do what they need to do to secure the 3 points. Every sub not being defensive. You can go up 3 goals and not park the bus. That's another new thing we've learned in 2024. It made it fun to watch. And there were, like, those last few minutes that got a little nervy where Charlotte was like, oh, shit, we can get a goal back here. And they almost did. It was very close.
Yeah.
But for the fingertips of Dane St. Clair. And I think a crossbar at some point as well, or maybe shanked over the crossbar. There were a few of those too, but all the guys who I highlighted in my preview for this game were either like just didn't play, the star to watch didn't sub on, started on the bench and stay there. I feel bad for Pukki and Lude's countrymen. Ronan, who's giving up the 3 goals. They're going to hear about that a little bit in the next international camp, I think, but made him look like he was running in circles, and he doesn't usually look like that. So,
you could just say the same thing about Austin's Alex Ring, right?
Yeah.
Countryman, like, yep. he'll hear about it in camp too.
Oh, yeah. 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 So I think, you know, right up until the end, nobody let off the gas. I mean, aside from some of the older legs trying to save it for the next game, knowing they've got to come home and play supporting Kansas City and take points at home against a Western Conference team. And then, yeah, I haven't really taken a deep dive into the quote sheet yet here, but everyone's still just looking ahead. Like, they sang on the plane. They posted that video last night. They were partying on the way back, but they were all talking about, yeah, we've got to take the positives, take the negatives, learn from it for next time. And they say the exact same thing after every win, every loss, every draw. And I think that's a buy-in with the system. That we haven't seen for ever.
Yeah. MJ, any final thoughts on the match?
It was fun to see another formation and different formations in attack and defense and have it work. You know, everything from Kervin being both midfielder and center back to Rosales being both, you know, left back and wing back and left wing, you know, like you saw, I think in previous episodes of this podcast, I demanded, why does formation changes have to coincide with personnel substitutions and personnel changes? Why does, I understand that when you make a sub change, that's a perfect time to impart certain other tactical information to a player who can then pass that around the rest of the team. But why is that the only time that we are making a formation change, is when we're substituting on a player? Can we show some awareness and show some flexibility? And so for me personally, on the nerdy X's and O's stuff, this was really, really fun to watch.
Right on. Yeah. I'll just say, you know, some final stats, our stats there. This Charlotte had won, I believe, or had not been defeated at home for 14 straight matches, I think was the final number before. And then 11, that's 11 months almost to the day when Minnesota snapped their streak. So it was awesome. And then you mentioned that there was some little more harrowing shots towards the end of the game, but Charlotte only had one shot on target, you know, and only two unblocked shots in the second half. So Minnesota, you know, clearly, I think, again, to the point about Ramsey and tactical changes and everything, you know, they came out with a game plan, they punched Charlotte in the face, and they just, they played really good defense the entire way. So good on the Loons.
And they stadium emptied out with like 20 minutes left to play. It was like, you could get a couple goals back and still have something to cheer about, but.
Right.
Okay. See ya.
Always nice to send send players home early. So, right. Fans home early. So, all right. So also on Sunday, Minnesota United FC 2, they went to Portland and beat Timbers 2. Carlos Harvey had a hat trick. Patrick Wea scored the first goal of the game and his first goal of 2024. It was 4-2 for a good chunk of the second half before Timbers made it 4-3 late. So just another solid win. This is Minnesota United FC2's first win of the MLS Next Pro season as well. So congrats to them. They'll be playing on May 12th. I believe there's a season ticket holder event thing at out at the Nessie. If you're a season ticket member, you should have got an email about it. You can get a ticket to the Tuesdays game and all that stuff, fun stuff. So should be cool. All right, another Loons news. Oh, sorry, go ahead, MJ.
Two of Carlos Harvey's goals in the hat trick were penalty kicks. But what impressed me is he did it not the slow baby step run up, but kind of this delayed stride run up on the first goal on the penalty kick. And he went to his left, the goalkeeper's right. And the goalkeeper gets the right way, but he was nowhere near being able to save the ball. When he got the second one, he kind of did a similar run up and then went to the other way. He went to his right, the goalkeeper's left. And in that case, the goalkeeper went the same way and was like nowhere. Like, yeah, it was fun to see him be like, yeah, you're going to take these penalty kicks, and him just do a, you know, psychological, you know, whatever you want to call it, masterclass on reserve goalkeeper.
Yeah.
That was really fun to watch.
Listen, man, penalties as a goalkeeper are fucking stressful. I saved one last week, actually. I dove the wrong way, but I stuck my foot out and the guy didn't hit it properly into the other corner. So it hit my foot and kind of did one of those like loops. It was looping. And it's like, I was like, oh shit, that's going to go into the goal. And like, it hit the shitty turf that we play on and kind of like skittered off, kind of like did like a little, kind of like one of those. But I saved a penalty. And that's like, I've only saved like two in games that I can remember here in the last like couple years. So
you can put that date on your resume.
Yeah. And... yeah.
I'll tell Alex Smear that you're coming for his job.
You know what? Don't say anything like that. But I get home because the game didn't kick off till 10 o'clock. So I get home at 11. I can't tell anybody. I'm not gonna wake up Anna and be like, "Hey, I saved a penalty." Or wake up my kids. Wake up my kids and be like, "Clap for dad! Clap for dad!"
I mean, that's showing a lot of restraint on your part. You should just get a gold star for not waking up your family.
Tell my wife, she's fucking welcome. No, no, it's funny.
he was standing in the bedroom door when she did wake up in the morning and said, "Yeah, well, good morning. Guess what I did last night?"
Yeah, I didn't go to sleep. I just stood by her bed and just waited for her to wake up. Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of winning things, Songbin Jeong has been with the Korea Republic AFC U23 qualifying tournament team. They went 3-0 in their group. They beat Japan this morning, 1-0. So they took first place in their group. It's a group of four groups of four. And so top two from each group make it to the quarterfinals. And then from there, the semifinals and the finals. Songbin Jeong, unfortunately, went off on a stretcher in this game. We don't know. No one really knows what happened. It sounded like he had a cramp. That's at least the last thing I saw in one of the Slacks that I'm in. But I'm not sure if there's been any updates on his status, Bridget.
I got a message a couple of people who were trying to catch some of the local media there, who all said that it was cramp or muscle spasm of some sort, and he was walking around after the game. So yeah. not as bad as it looked. I think they were really just trying to get him
precautionary
off the field quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
So. Yeah, so, you saw him go up for that header and you saw him land, and then he's like in slow motion, just
he
crouched, you know, from standing to crouching to like falling down on the pitch.
And I'm that's like, scary as shit.
He immediately waved in for a sub and started stretching his hamstring. So I figured that maybe it would have been worse, because he did land kind of a really awkward angle, and he's not the kind of guy to just sit down on the pitch and ask for a sub. So another improved player this season. It looks like it's not nearly as bad as it initially looked. So
yeah, cool. All right. Well, they play Indonesia on Thursday at 12:30 p.m. Time here. And if they win that, they will be in the semifinals on Monday, April 29th.
And this is critical, because if they make it to the semifinals, work's still not done. Top three teams, not top four teams, top three teams go to the Olympics. So
yes, and the fourth place team, it does have a playoff against Guinea for the final spot. So there is a playoff between the. So if they make the semifinals, they will play. If they win the semifinal game, they'll definitely be in the Olympics. If they win the third place game, obviously they'll be in fourth place. They have to play in that playoff, and if they win that, then they'll be in the Olympics. And we'd assume that Songbin would be a part of these teams if he's healthy. Obviously, with the Olympic team, they can bring in three overage players. So I'm not sure who South Korea would bring in. Probably not Songbin. Heung-min Son. Although, is there a summer tournament in AFC this year, MJ? Or
I don't think so.
Okay,
I could be wrong, but like Songbin Jeong is under 23. Right?
Yeah.
So like, I think he makes the roster, but it's gonna be like a really experienced defender, like center back Kim Min Jae, who plays for Bayern Munich, and probably Sun Heung-min, who plays for that other team that I don't like to talk about.
That's what I'm saying. I was like, well, I mean, depending on it's, I mean, the roster doesn't, they don't add three roster spots. They can just bring in three older overage players as part of their roster. So there's a non-zero possibility that he might be left off the roster. I don't imagine he would be.
Yes.
But especially depending on who they bring in, right? If they bring in, if it's just in terms of forwards, if it's just Heung-min Son, then probably he's good. But if they bring in what's his nuts from Wolves as well, who's the so if they bring in both Son and the Wolves striker, they could possibly, Songbin might not make that roster. So hopefully he does. Hopefully they could take care of business. If they lose on Thursday, I'm sure, Songbin will be back, not in time for the game on Saturday, obviously, but probably would be available for the game against Atlanta the following week. If he makes it to the semifinals, he definitely is not back until after the Atlanta match. So that's just sort of where we are with Son, Song Min-jeon. Hugo Bakurak, as we mentioned, he's out 2 months now, or 6 to 8 weeks. He had surgery for a meniscus tear. He suffered that in practice, right, Bridget? That wasn't like, yeah, from the game.
Monday.
Yeah, last Monday. So, and then the other just sort of note, I don't know if you saw the Pioneer Press article, Derek Valentin did color commentary for ESPN 1500 during the last two home matches while he was doing his rehab. It's a really great piece from Greeter about how, you know, Valentin's wanted to be a commentator and play soccer and be a color and be a sports center anchor, I think was what he said. So he's, you know, learned that. And Minnesota's actually been, you know, to their credit, Minnesota's been very good at allowing players to, you know, learn the whatever they want. So like Jamie Watson, obviously, what's his face? Who is the backup goalkeeper, or who is the goalkeeper a couple years ago? Tyler Miller, when he was out for the season, he did some work with Valley Sports North, and obviously Zarek Valentin getting an opportunity to do some color commentating during a match was pretty cool. So yeah, anything else I'm missing?
What's his nuts on Wolves is Hwang Hee-chan, by the way.
Hwang Hee-chan, yeah. Thank you.
On the Zarek Valentin thing, several of us were joking in the press box about that whole deal, and it was just like, yeah, it's, you know, too bad he doesn't like to talk at all, or it's too bad he has poor social skills.
Like, you could just, that is like, certainly like, not one of Valentin's problems. That's well, for sure.
So. Voice in it. Like, all of us were just kind of like, shoot, that was sarcasm. Like, yeah, it's a perfect fit. So I'm happy.
I was up there the first day that he went in there, and whichever game that was, not Houston, the one before that.
RSL.
Yes. And he's like going into the, he's walking into the press box, and somebody was like, dude, what are you doing up here? It's like, oh, I'm going into the booth. There, what booth? You don't work here. And he just, I do now. Like, good for you, man.
That's good. Good for, yeah. Good for him.
He's like,
good for him.
They're letting me talk today. I'm like, oh, okay. You go ahead.
Very cool. Well, he did make the game day roster on Sunday, so he's back. Maybe not 100% yet, but it'll be great to see him back on the pitch as well. So, all right. Lastly, I guess we have the next match coming up against Sporting Kansas City at home at Allianz, 7:30 on Saturday. So I would just like to ask if we can fucking win at home, please. That would be very, very nice. If we won some matches at Allianz and could sing Wonderwall again. So, yeah.
Man, you're needy.
I know. Very, very needy. Anything else in the world of Minnesota soccer that I missed? It's been, I know Aurora has been slowly rolling out rosters and stuff like that. I think we'll maybe wait until kind of have full rosters. But yeah, anything else, MJ?
There was a Minneapolis City event at the Corner Bar this past Thursday in which President Adam Pribble spoke, head coach Carl Craig spoke. There were several players in attendance. I just want to say, like, it's fun to hear those guys speak. They were asked several tough questions, and it was really fun to be at, just to get excited about that season coming up. Certain things were mentioned about, you know, what is Minneapolis City's mission, what's our end goal, and what one of the big takeaways was to make Minnesota soccer better. You know, if that means sending Loic on to Minnesota United, that means sending Loic on. It's not, you know, boarding the town for ourselves. And not every player that plays at Minneapolis City is going to go on to play professionally or get professional contracts, but it was reiterated to, you know, let's be a part of making Minnesota soccer better. There were other things that were said, but like, that was my big takeaway.
Cool.
Speaking of, And just to throw another note in there, and I mean, I think we're going before this anyway, but Minnesota Super Cup is coming up. Speaking of making Minnesota soccer better, May 11th. So that would be the Saturday before the Tuesday's game, season ticket holder event on the 12th.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, on the 11th. Yeah, that'd be the Saturday before, so. Yeah, I was, I don't know about you guys, but I was putting the Minneapolis City, the U23 team schedule, Minnesota Aurora 2 schedule, along with the along with Minnesota United and some of the next pro games. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I was looking at my Google Calendar. I'm like, oh my God, there's like a 3-week stretch, like end of May, beginning of June, where I think there's only like 4 days where there's not a soccer match. RIP my marriage, I guess.
Like I was telling you, I'm just gonna be like sleeping in the back of my car in between stadiums. We don't even have Aurora 2 on the spreadsheet yet, or quite a few other teams.
Yeah. Yeah, like, it'll be fun. But yeah, I mean, make sure save your money.
If you want to see any of us, it better be at a soccer game in May. Otherwise, we're gonna have to wait until
Absolutely. Well, speaking of seeing us, Bridget, where can folks find you?
I am on Twitter at BC McDowell. The outlet is at Northland Soccer, and NorthlandSoccerJournal.com.
Cool. MJ?
I am also at Northland Soccer, NorthlandSoccer.com, and you can find me at MJ Matsui on Twitter, at MJ MATTSUI.
Right on. Yep, you can always also find the podcast at TDIKMN. I'm at Texas Zeller on Twitter. Hit up the Substack. I keep threatening. I saw a couple movies to add to the Substack, including Villains Inc. Which is not very good. And then Sasquatch Sunset, which I saw last night with Tim and Mel. And I just will confess, I was not nearly high enough for that particular movie. So may need to try and rectify that and go again a little higher. But yeah, I have a lot of thoughts. Like I said, I think I've seen now 40 movies. I'm seeing the Copa. That's the other cool thing. I'm seeing the Copa 71 movie at the MSP IFF, the St. Paul, Minneapolis St. Paul International Film Festival. It's about the very first major soccer tournament. Took place in Brazil, and has a bunch of apparently some like really amazing. They found some really amazing footage. So it's at the St. Anthony May next tomorrow as part of the St. Paul, Minneapolis St. Paul International Film Festival. So I'll probably try putting together a review of that as well. So all right, yeah. So get the Substack. Hit us up on Twitter, or as Bridget mentioned, you can find us at all of the local establishments and local soccer matches coming up between now and mid-July. So yeah, buckle up.
If you see us in our cars, we're sleeping.
don't knock on windows, please.
please don't knock on my window and then say, hey, hi. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi. Can we talk soccer? No.
Right on. All right. Thanks, everybody. For the days you know, this is the days I know.
We have got to try and work it out, because we both know we can't do nothing at all. We do our thing, son.
Long as you do yours, land here become feet, cun. Yeah.
We do our thing, son.
Through the act, we attract two, hope to reach one.
We do our thing.
Do it.
We do our thing, son.
Some will paint a piece, some will spray with a machine gun. It's mad work to be done.
We do our thing, son.
I can't do nothing at all. Y'all know we can't do nothing.